station promise outstanding content, but when it's time to deliver, they fall flat on their ridiculous faces. Enter LA Talk Radio, a cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk station that delivers totally original content without any commercials. Log on to latalkradio.com and get involved with the best talk radio station on the internet. LA Talk Radio, we say what we want.
The morning show that's on your side. But then again, so is appendicitis.
Get ready for the most popular morning show anywhere on the internet. You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Mia right here on LA Talk Radio. If you'd like to take part in the show today, give us a call at 323-203-0815. And now your program hosts, Sam and Mia.
Good morning and welcome to Friday. It's June 21st. Is today the first day of summer or was it yesterday?
Oh, I think it's today, the 21st, right?
It is today.
Yeah, today's the first day of summer.
Actually, our guest yesterday, she said it was yesterday, so maybe it's the 20th.
I think what she was talking about is like that whole, the whole yoga thing that she was doing started. Mm-hmm. Remember how she said it's like 2 days?
The summer solstice.
And then 3 days, yeah.
Oh, okay.
But
well,
I think officially summer starts today.
Today. Okay. Yeah. Well, welcome to summer.
Yes.
It's
welcome,
like,
summer.
Yeah. It's like not like we haven't really felt summer here.
Oh, I know. I know. Yeah. I look outside.
It's
like,
summer here all year round.
Still a beautiful day.
We still don't get seasons here, even a week later.
I know. Well, my body looks like it's been summer for like 3 weeks now. I look all, like in one day, all of a sudden I'm so tan. I love this stuff.
How did that happen? It's not from the sun, is it?
No, it's not from the sun. I mean, I don't really like go out of my way to try to lay out and get tan. Mm. But I had a photo shoot yesterday and I just felt like, you know, I should just be a little tan. You know, I'm like, I don't know. I just feel like I need a little extra, you know, a little extra color to me.
Right.
And so I went to this store. Uh-huh. I went to Ulta and I bought like a lotion, like a really good self tanner.
Right.
I just went in there. I'm like, okay, what's the best one you've got?
Really? Was that the first time you've done this or?
It was the first time I ever put tanner on myself. Yeah, because I don't really go to like tanning beds.
Right.
And I cannot get a spray tan. I can't stand the smell.
Terrible,
oh my God. It smells so bad.
I know.
I can't even.
And then women
like,
walk around with it all day and you go, you know, how can you stand it?
Right? I know. It's so gross. I don't know. Maybe some people like the smell, but I remember when I was in the RV on the way down to Vegas for the beginning part of the trip, it was a girl sitting next to me and I was like, oh, my God, I couldn't even sit next to her. I cannot stand
really?
That smell.
It was that strong?
Yes. I'm like, oh, my God, somebody just went tanning. Like, I can't. Somebody opened a window. Oh, my gosh.
Oh, wow.
I can't breathe. No.
It's funny. Now, doesn't that stuff come off and doesn't it rub off on your clothes and stuff like that? I mean,
no, this stuff hasn't. Yeah, I mean.
No, not the stuff that you're wearing, but the spray.
Yeah.
No?
Yeah,
isn't
I
that
would,
like,
well, I mean, you have to like let it dry for a little while. And
no,
then,
I imagine, you know, but then if you sweat or something, it could...
Yeah. Well, when I read on the box on my instructions when I bought this stuff, it was like, please wait like, you know, 8 hours before sweating or showering or shaving. And I'm like, uh-oh.
There you go. That's going to work.
I can't sweat for 8 hours. I'm like, how does that happen? But no, yeah, it's a... worked out quite nicely. I kind of like it.
So
it just makes my body look better. Like all of a sudden I'm like, oh, hello there, abs. Like, oh, I didn't realize you were there.
Oh, really? It accentuates your abs and stuff? Really?
Yeah. You know, and I kind of have them, but, you know, now that I'm tan, I like really have them. I'm like, okay, I'll take that.
Yeah.
That's why I'm wearing this color too. This like ridiculous.
It's a beautiful
like,
color on
peachy
you,
coral color. Cause I'm like, well, I can pull it off today. I have a tan body.
Yeah, there you go.
It's fun.
Wow, I know.
What about you, Sam? Do you lay out? Do you like to?
No, I do stay tan though because I sit outside on the balcony sometimes and work and that, so the sun just shines, you know. So and for me, it's like being in the sun for 10 minutes. I get tan, you know.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So. So no, I don't. I don't put any sprays on.
Yeah, no.
Nothing like that.
No. Tanning salon visits for you.
Yeah. So now you do yoga, but you also work out. Do you go to the gym?
Yeah. I mean, I mostly do. Yeah, I like yoga and Pilates. And then, you know, if I have time before, because, like, that's the thing. You always want to try to get your workout in before yoga.
Right.
Because afterwards, you know, you do the, gosh, I hope I'm saying this right, the Shavasana. I think that's the word for it. I could be totally wrong.
Sounds as good as anything.
I'm so bad with the yoga terminology. But I think that's when, at the very end, you, like, lay down and they just have, like, the music playing and you just kind of like, you know, you close your eyes and meditate and reflect a little bit, and it's like, oh, like it's nice and you're so relaxed. And then they're like, okay, slowly open your eyes and get up. And then you're like, okay, like the last thing I'm gonna want to do is run on a freaking treadmill,
right?
You know, like I'm
totally
so relaxed. I'm like,
you.
Okay, I'm gonna go home now.
So you
so
get
I have
into
to make
the
sure
yoga.
I get my workout in before yoga.
Right.
Otherwise, it's not happening.
Yeah. Now, how often do you go? Do you go every day, every other day to the gym?
I try to go, I don't know, at least like 3 times a week, you know, just depending on my schedule.
Right.
Because that's the thing, sometimes, like with the, you know, with the classes, the way they have them scheduled, it's like, you know, you got to try to
I know,
plan your day.
I try to go to the
and
gym.
And then also physical therapy.
Right.
I try to go there.
That's true,
you know,
huh?
Two or three times a week, and they work me out as well.
Really?
So I really, yeah, I get to
So you injured yourself pretty bad in the accident, huh?
Mm-hmm.
In the car accident?
I did.
Wow.
Yeah.
Did you break anything?
Fun. My nose.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
But nothing else, huh?
No, nothing else.
Wow, good for you. So why do you have to do the physical therapy then? Did you did hurt your body?
Oh, it's for my neck and my back. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Wow. Yeah. What about you? Have you ever had any crazy injuries from a car accident?
No.
Besides getting in a car accident because you were looking at a hot girl walking down the street?
Yeah, there you go.
Want to revisit that one, Sam?
Not particularly, no. It's not a highlight of my life.
It's still a great story, though.
I know.
In its own twisted way.
Yeah. But no, I've been in accidents, but never that bad, you know. So, no, never sustained any injury. Thank goodness, you know.
That's good.
But it's very scary because people drive like shit.
Oh, yeah.
And,
yeah, they do.
You know, and people forget that a car is like a missile, you know. It's a weapon. You've got to be in charge of it. You got to be in control. And they let just anybody drive, you know. I mean, you don't even have to take driver's ed or anything. You just get behind the wheel. Yeah. I mean, here, if you can pass the test, you're good.
Oh, yikes.
Yeah. You can have friends teach you how to drive.
Yeah.
You never heard of that before?
No.
It's different
See,
in Chicago?
It, well, in Chicago, you have to take a class, either through, like, some kids do it through, like, high school. Like,
right.
They actually take it as a course in school. But because of where, like, my birthday falls, like, it's a, you know, half a year thing. So it's like I wouldn't have been able to get my license right away depending on, you know, because you have to be 15 to get your permit.
Oh, okay.
So that's kind of how they work that out. So I just did it privately.
Right.
So I was able to, you know, get my driver's license almost right away.
No,
so.
Here there's no such requirement at all.
Wow.
All they require here is that you breathe.
That's so frightening. Well, freaking, no wonder why.
Yeah.
No wonder why. That explains so much.
It does, huh?
Yeah.
Doesn't it?
Yeah, it really does. Although, I wish in my driver's ed that they taught me how to parallel park.
Yeah.
That's something that Sam here has volunteered to teach me.
Yeah, I promised
me, so.
I'd do that.
One of these days.
It's very simple. I mean, you know, my brother has a car that parks itself, you know. He's got a Focus,
that's what
you know.
Need.
Yeah, and it parks itself. It's amazing to just watch it, you know. But there's obviously a way to do it, you know, so you just have to know. You know, you do it once and you'll be able to do it.
Yeah,
no
I know.
Problem.
It takes me like 20 minutes.
You need to
so
understand the principle of it.
And I have a little car,
it.
Too.
Yeah.
That's the thing. It's not like I've got like this huge truck I'm trying to park. I just, it's just not.
No,
just
if
not
nobody
my
showed
thing.
You can't do it. It's very simple.
I'm excited to learn the trick.
Yeah. So before we get to our guest, we have a very special guest in the studio. I wanted to bring up the fact that Kim and Kanye. Do you know what they named their baby?
No.
Northwest.
Wait.
They have a baby girl. They named her
what?
Northwest.
Seriously?
Seriously.
Northwest.
Northwest.
Okay. So, because, okay. Well, I'm just, okay. I just needed a minute to process that.
I know. I mean, what is it with these people?
I mean, I kind of get like, oh, it's funny because Kanye West, his last name is West, so her last name's going to
be
West.
Oh, that's true. That's true, huh?
So it's North Wes, yeah. But not really. So your child's name.
It probably
name,
means something to
North.
Them. Yeah, that's true. So the name is North. Why North. Do they do this to their kids? I mean, they're gonna have to live with this all their lives. You know?
I know. I don't know. I think they just thought it would be like fun and witty. But this is a person.
Yeah.
Like they have to live the rest of their life being called by that name.
I just think those celebrities feel they really need to stand out, you know, and have something different and
I
have cool
so.
Names and all that. You
I
know,
mean, but you just never hear of a celebrity naming their child like Michael
yeah,
or
exactly.
something or Lindsay or anything even semi-normal.
I know. Well, they're not normal, so that's why.
That's very true.
There you go.
All
right. Well, we have a very special guest in the studio. Why don't you go ahead and introduce him to us?
Yes, our very special guest in the studio today is Brian Howie, the creator of Pieces of Ass.
Oh, welcome to the show, Brian.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Good. Get a little closer to the mic when you talk.
Northwest and is, of all the things they could have chosen, I think right. the child actually got off pretty easy.
You think, huh?
Yeah, I guess that's true.
Kanye.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we've on this show, we've heard of Pieces of Ass so many times, it's we can't even count it.
I know.
And you're the creator of it. So
I am.
It's nice to finally meet you in that. So now, we'll talk a little bit about yourself also, but tell us a little bit about the show and what it's about.
Well, the show is essentially about a dozen beautiful women, mm-hmm. sort of sharing their personal stories, experiences, anecdotes, thoughts, opinions on what life is like for them as a beautiful woman.
Right.
The good, the bad, the funny, the indifferent. It's relatively empowering. You know, most of our audience traditionally over the last 10 years has been women.
Uh-huh.
You know, we try and make it very relatable. We try and make it funny. We try and make it smart. But, you know, a lot of times beautiful women are not heard or they're at least not listened to. And I kind of want to hear what they have to say.
Yeah.
And, so that's
so you
the,
think a lot of people want to hear that?
I do. A lot yeah. of women want to hear that. Yeah. Want to, you know, people aren't necessarily looking for answers. They just like to know they're not the only ones with the same questions.
Right.
And so our show, you know, deals with a lot of topics that are very common to all women. And, you know, beautiful women is a little bit the gimmick to get people in the door. But
you know,
and imagine that, like beautiful women talking. It's like yeah. it's like creatures at the zoo sometimes. But
yeah. There you go. And I'm sure it wasn't hard for you to look at either, you know, while you're working with them.
Yeah, well, sometimes. There's pros and cons, I'll say that.
I guess. So you're saying you've been running it for a few years now?
10 years.
This is
our 10th
wow.
anniversary. We started almost exactly 10 years. We made our debut in New York City July 16th, 2003. Mm. It was supposed to be a three-week run, a little sort of experiment that we had, and it ran fairly consistently through about 2008. We took a few years off to rest,
yeah.
and now we brought it back for our 10th anniversary season, and it's going
very nice. So it started in New York.
Started
is that where you were living at the time?
Yeah, I'm from New York. It started in the theater called Theater 80 down in the East Village of New York, probably about 160 seat theater.
Uh-huh.
We put out a casting notice, no name for the show, and just said, you know, if you're a smart, dynamic, attractive woman and are interested in creating something based on that fact in a live performance.
Right.
And we got buried in headshots and resumes.
Really?
Like
wow.
Thousands and thousands, because, you know, I think a lot of women really want to have their say.
Right.
It's an opportunity for our performers to have the ability to create and showcase things that they feel passionate about. And, you know, when we first started it in New York, probably 7 of our, at that time, 10 cast members were Ivy League graduates, so they were really smart and beautiful.
Uh-huh.
And we sort of figured it out as we went along. The show became entitled Pieces of Ass for, you know, a bunch of different reasons.
Yeah,
the girls
how did you come up with that?
The girls actually came up with that. I mean, it's sort of a triple entendre, meaning they're doing a bunch of short pieces. They're obviously a piece of ass because they're attractive. And at the end of the show, theoretically, a whole puzzle comes together in a bunch of different pieces. Also, at that time in New York, the thing to do both on Broadway and off Broadway was to have a provocative title. It was just a thing to do 10 years ago. So it was a little bit if you wanted to compete with Puppetry of the Penis, you had to sort of.
Was there a show like that?
Oh yeah, it was fantastic. They had it was awesome. The things these guys do were unbelievable, but they couldn't. They were the only ones with that particular skill. The Boobs the Musical was a big show back then. So back in the early 2000s in New York City, you had to get attention, and our title got us a lot of attention.
Yeah.
We quickly got a lot of celebrities to do the show, and that really took it to another level, so we brought it to L.A.
That's cool.
Yeah, yeah, now, there were quite a bit of big people in the show, females.
Yeah.
It was like Jamie Lynn.
Yeah, sadly, and, both Catherine Narducci, who played Charmaine Bucco on Sopranos, and Jamie Lynn Sigler, who's Meadow Soprano.
Yeah.
Texted him because obviously James Gandolfini passed away.
Right.
They both did the show in New York. Brooke Burke's done the show. Janice Dickinson, Rachel Hunter, Nicole Richie.
Very cool. So now, were you doing theater before that?
Never.
Never.
The only thing I knew about theater was I didn't enjoy it very much.
Really?
I would go to a lot of shows. I would go to a lot of my friends' shows. I lived right in the heart of the theater district in Manhattan. And I just thought there's a different or better way to do it. I always think theater acting, even at its highest level, is the only discipline of acting that actually looks like acting.
Yeah.
And so I wanted it to be more natural. I wanted it to be more interactive. I wanted it to be alcohol involved. I wanted music. And I sort of, because I had no experience doing theater at all, I mean, they really had to explain to me what stage right meant.
Wow.
That I was able to sort of create something new that I've seen a lot of shows, both in New York and in Los Angeles, pick up a lot of the things that sort of we did out of the box back then. And, I just think people should, create things in the way they want to create them and not...
Not based on whether people like it or not.
Yeah, I think, not anything you've done before, So I even sometimes worry when people come to audition for our show if they've seen the show before, because I don't want them to be doing an impression of things that they think they've seen on our stage.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So.
Wow. So what were you doing before that?
Writing. I was doing television, film. I started as a writer. I started producing TV. I did a bunch of stuff for VH1 for a while. I initially wanted to be a novelist, but I didn't have the talent for it. So I started doing screenplays, and literally the very first thing I ever directed in my life was Pieces of Ass.
Wow.
Then I directed a whole bunch after that, and now I actually think I'm a pretty good director, and I've sort of lost a lot of my other skills. so I've directed quite a bit of theater, so I sort of get pigeonholed as a theater guy, but
right. That's
not my preference or my background or anything. I really like to think of myself as a writer.
So you're a writer,
yeah.
pretty much.
And then how did you even transition to that? Like, I know you've always been around it, and I know you didn't particularly like it, but at what point were you like, yeah, I'm actually going to be a part of this now. I want to be, like, in the theater scene and direct and do all this instead of writing.
Because I like to, people always say the old theater cliche is you really enjoy that immediate live reaction.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I like to hear an audience... think, if that makes sense. You can actually hear people think if you have a line that is clever enough. You can sort of hear their brains whirring, and I sort of like that live event excitement of it. It's sometimes kind of hard to capture, even on television. Like, theater doesn't really work very well on tape. It doesn't really work video. You can't capture that feeling in the room.
And, right.
I like the excitement of a big event. I like a lot of moving parts, putting it together. And I do like working with the cast. I like the creative process. I like the growth and collaborating and trying to figure out what it is that makes somebody tick and how they sort of fit into whatever we're working on. And
right. So has that like consumed your life in the past 10 years, or have you done other things as well?
It did for a while, and then I took a break from it, started a publishing company because I wanted longer sort of tableau to tell some of these stories. So we started a company called 4th Street Media, which is First in Women's Rights, WRITES, because I just wanted longer. I most books are bought by women for women about women, and I just think women are far more interesting than men. So I wanted a little bit.
That's because you're a man. That's what.
Right. Yeah. So I wanted
join
a little.
The club.
I wanted a little bit longer format. So I like the books. So we're publishing a lot of books and stuff like that. But then I got sort of lured back into doing for nostalgic purposes, a one-off of Pieces of Ass, our 10th anniversary show back at the Fonda Theater in March, and it went so well that now I'm back in. And
awesome.
And we're doing it all over the place.
Awesome.
So
you're originally from New York.
I am.
What part of New York?
Westchester County.
Westchester. Oh, I have a friend over there right now.
And then I lived in Manhattan for quite a while.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'd be going back and forth to L.A., you know, back and forth, and never thought you'd live here. And then one day you get off the plane in the middle of February and it's 75 degrees and that's it. You don't go back to New York.
Yeah. Why were you coming to LA before that? Was that also to get into entertainment?
Yeah, meetings and pitching TV stuff. And then when I got an agent out here, it made it a lot easier. And he's from New York too. And he's like, you should just stay here. And
really?
I was like, no. And now every time I go back to New York, you know, we all of us New Yorkers come out here and we all think we're going back.
Yeah. But you're
Jerry Seinfeld went back. That's about it.
There are so many New Yorkers in L.A. You know, I think half the population here came from New York. And I think because it's such a contrast, you know, to the lifestyle over there.
Yeah.
And many, you know, I mean, us on the West Coast, we love to visit New York. But I don't know many people that say they could live there, you know, because it's so different.
It's tough to live there if you're sort of on the outside, but once you get into it and you get in your neighborhood and you're there, it's it's sort of a routine that you get into. But every time I go back now, I think I want to be there less. You're from Chicago, Mia. I always say that if everything is equal, weather-wise, if it's 75 degrees everywhere, Chicago wins.
Really?
I think Chicago is the best city.
Is it beautiful?
If you take the weather, when the weather's great, and that's part of why when the weather's great, because most of the time the weather's bad, so everybody goes out to play at once.
Yeah,
but
for sure.
Chicago does have everything.
Yeah,
that's cool. I've never been to Chicago. That's one of the places I haven't been.
You know, and it's such a great city. I feel like we have like one of the best skylines.
Yeah.
Oh my God, I love it. It's such a fun city. And then we have Lake Michigan, so it's like we still kind of have a beach.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not, you know.
Yeah, well,
whatever.
It's a beach,
but it's still a beach. It's fun. It's it's a little dirty. I wouldn't recommend going in the water, but.
Well, ours is not exactly clean either over here.
But that's true. But yeah, the city life of it is so.
And the people are nice. It's a nice bunch of people in Chicago.
Yeah. There's a lot of nice people here, too. You just have to find them.
They are. They all came from Chicago.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, there's quite a bit of us out here.
Really?
I feel like. Chicagoans?
Well, it's a big city.
There's a lot of you in Arizona because they all moved to see the Cubs in spring training, and they just stayed there.
Really? They stayed there?
Everybody in Arizona is from Illinois.
I can totally see that. That's right. That's where we have our spring training.
It's sort of like the Gulf Coast of Florida. Everybody's from Ohio because they just took 75 down, and they're all on that side. Everybody on the on the Atlantic side of Florida all came down 95, so they're from Philly,
so
New York, and Boston.
Very interesting. So you like to travel quite a bit? You've been.
I do. Places? I lived in Paris when I was a kid for a few years, and that sort of spoiled me.
That's awesome.
I love it over there. I like, you know, I always make the comment, people disagree with me, that I like Paris because I think the women are in charge. I think it's one of the only cities in the world that's like that.
What does that mean?
I think that French, if most women, I always wanted to, if anybody out there want to write a book called like how to, you know, think like a French woman, I just think they have such a stylish confidence that comes across when you're in Paris that almost makes, you know, Parisian men look a little softer than probably the rest of Europe. You know, if you go to Europe, the Spanish men and the Italian men and the German men are very powerful. French is a little different, and I think the reason for that is sort of comes from the French women. I think they're just very confident group, and I sort of think it makes it a better
really. So
place. They're I'm very
a lot
pro woman.
More assertive. They're more
they are.
Assertive. So that you think they're intimidating to women, to men?
A little bit. I mean, you know, the old line that style is sort of taste meets confidence. Mm-hmm. And that's why a lot of sort of fashion comes out of Paris. I think it has a lot to do with the women and just the way they carry themselves. And they're just it's an interesting place. And, you know, I've been a lot of places and you know, I think that's still my favorite. I think I'd always like to go back to Paris.
Cool.
Interesting.
So you must have learned French very well, right? You
I
were
did.
Young?
Yeah, you pick yeah. it up really well when you're young. I was yeah. me and my two sisters, and we were young, and, you know, my poor mom, we moved there for my dad's job, and my mom was stuck there with three kids not knowing any French at all, and we would
language.
Pick it right up.
Oh,
and,
wow.
Yeah.
She had a little trouble.
I know, that's difficult for older people to move, although they're probably not that old, but, I mean, once you go past a certain age, it's really hard to learn a language.
It is.
Mm-hmm. You know? And because, I mean, I've been trying, but there's no way, you know. I mean, it's just like I get bored with it. I'm trying to pick up some Spanish, you know.
Yeah,
but,
Rosetta
Stone. Yeah.
I just think it's such a good kid thing for children now to learn Chinese languages mm-hmm. like that. Mm-hmm. The more you can sort of immerse your child into as much of that as possible, I think it just gives them a huge advantage.
That's true. Yeah. It really does, you know.
I learned quite a bit of Spanish when yeah. I was young. Just for the heck of it. I think right. when I was like 1 year old, I could count up to 10 in Spanish and English. Just for the fun of it. And that's why I think, like, later when I, you know, when I was going to high school and I actually took Spanish class mm-hmm. in high school, you know, I always kind of knew, you know, just the majority of the basic words, and I can, like, roll my R's and everything.
Right.
So when I was learning, they were like, oh, like, do you speak Spanish in your home with your family? I'm like, no, I don't. I just, like, because you sound so native when you speak it.
Wow.
And I think it was just because, you know, when there's, you know, different languages, there's like just different ways you even like position your tongue and move your mouth that, you know, if you're not, you know, used to doing it when you're young,
right.
you probably never be able
no,
to pick it
hard.
Up certain dialects and stuff like that. And that's why, like, there are only like three people in my class that could actually roll their R's, you know, like, like that,
yeah.
you know, when they speak, they do that.
Yeah.
And
like burrito.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Burrito. Burrito. I love doing that. It's so much fun. I'm like, how do you do that? I'm like, I don't know. Like, I just learned it when I was a kid. And
yeah.
I,
you know, and it's funny that it's the same letter, because, you know, I mean, it comes from Latin and everything, but you have an R, you have an R, and they're both...
Oh, that was pretty good.
Yeah, that was pretty good.
Wow.
Yeah, and they're both called... And they're both called R. I mean, you don't even pronounce yeah. them the same, you know? It's not like an M or like a D or something where it's the same in every language. Mm-hmm. But here you have an R that's supposed to be the same letter, and it's pronounced totally different. One is sort of throaty. The other one is tongue. So, you know.
English supposedly is the most difficult to learn of the Latin-rooted languages. Like,
yeah,
we
so
really
I heard.
Screwed things up. Somehow.
Oh, man.
Well, maybe, yeah, yeah, but that depends, you know, because I think French is a lot harder, you know, because you have almost no word is spelled the way it sounds, you know, so it's kind of hard,
true.
You know.
They do have a lot of three vowels in
right,
EAU like
and all that, you know, and it's just like, yeah.
But no.
Extra letters, silent letters.
Linguists who study it say that because of the way English sort of splintered out in various regions that we sort of messed up our own pronunciation somewhere along the line.
Yeah, that's true. I think English is one of the few languages where the adjective comes before the noun. You know what I'm saying? So you say beautiful woman or something, and in other languages, woman beautiful.
Oh, I didn't know that.
True.
That's smart. I'm going to use that.
Yeah.
That sounded good.
Don't you think like in French it's like that, right? Would you say...
No, I don't know. Le petit chien is a little dog.
Oh, okay.
Maybe that's wrong. But it sounded good.
No, it sounded good, yeah.
A little dog. Out of all the phrases to come up with and speak French, he picks a little dog.
I wanted to go with, I know. So did you see how fluent I was?
Well, that's what he learned.
I learned that.
No, but French is a very sensuous language. I like it a lot. You know, it's like once you... get used to it and stuff. I don't know. Maybe I've seen too many French movies or something. But
I'm always curious when somebody learns another language or they come to the United States, how long before they start dreaming in that language?
That
like,
language,
is there
yeah.
one night that they realize that it changed?
Yeah. No, it's probably like mixed,
know.
You know. I don't know. I'm still, to this day, I sometimes think in Hebrew, sometimes I think in English, you know.
If you hit your thumb with a hammer, what do you say? Mm.
Fuck.
Sounds English to me.
Oh, man. But no, I really do.
Because I remember the first time you curse in another language. I think
right.
that's probably a big moment.
It is. It is. That's what you learned, the first words, you know.
Interesting.
Yeah. You know?
Oh my gosh.
You didn't think about this.
Yeah, I'm thinking he's gonna say something like "ow" or "oi" or whatever.
I thought he was gonna say something better in Hebrew that I could pick up and use. But
no. And he says "fuck." Oh man.
Yeah. Sort of the way a lot of foreigners you hear learn their English from watching, episodes of Friends or something.
That's true.
Yeah.
You know how I learned a lot of it from reading Mad Magazine. I learned a lot of the slang and stuff.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, it's really cool. But at any rate, so back to you, Brian. So you lived in France for a while. So you were a child then.
Yes, right? I was a child then. 10, 11, 12.
And what was your dad doing? Why did you guys move
He was there? An IBM executive.
Oh, really?
IBM was a big company back then. Still are. And so he traveled a lot, and we moved there for about 3 years. And
so did you move to other places as well?
No.
No?
We did not. We were going to. My mother did not want to move anymore.
I don't blame
her. So we came home, and, I spoke fluent French as a kid, which was a completely useless skill until I got to high school, and then you sign up to take elementary French,
right.
And they don't know I speak French, so they thought I was a prodigy of some kind.
They're
like,
go.
Oh my God. Everybody else in the class is like, je m'appelle, and I'm like,
yeah.
And they're like, oh wow, how
like
do you do that?
You get a C in everything, and then suddenly you have an
suddenly
A.
Suddenly I have an A in that one, yeah. They're like, he's skipping ahead. I'm like, no.
Yeah, unfair advantage. There you go.
Right.
So so then after that, you guys moved back to New York?
Moved back to New York. I graduated, and then I went to college at Holy Cross in Massachusetts.
Mm-hmm.
And I lived in Greenwich, Connecticut for a long time.
Oh, nice. So that whole area there, people constantly move around there, right?
Yeah.
Philly and New York.
Philly and New York, and then eventually you dive in and move into Manhattan.
Yeah.
I mean, you're always like, oh, this is so hard to live here. And then once you're in there, I lived there. I lived in right in the heart of Times Square for 10 years.
Really?
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, now, how much does an apartment cost there?
Oh, my God. It's not so much more expensive than here. It's what you're getting for the...
Yeah.
You're getting a small apartment.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember, I was there 9/11 when all that stuff happened.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
And the prices dropped for maybe 6 months.
Really?
And because people were leaving the city and there was sort of a correction in the market, and then it all went back up bigger than ever.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's expensive in Manhattan.
Yeah. And you really get like a small place.
You really do get a small place. I do not know how people, unless you have a lot of money, sort of raise a family there.
Right.
It's tough. That's why people started moving out to Westchester County.
Stuff, yeah.
And then that's why Greenwich, Connecticut actually boomed. Because it's on the border of, it's the first town across the border, and they used to have no state income taxes in Connecticut.
Wow.
So anybody with money moved to Greenwich, Connecticut.
Wow.
And
Beverly Hills.
Right.
That grew
Fairfield County and Connecticut, and that started the whole Connecticut boom is basically commuters out of New York City.
Yeah.
And same with Northern New Jersey, same thing.
Yeah. Well, that's cool. So at what age did you decide you're going to try L.A.?
Well, the first time I ever came out here, I think I was writing screenplays, and I sold a couple screenplays, and so people would call me up. I was like 25 years old and said, great, when can we see your movie? And then I quickly learned that the process from having your screenplay optioned and seeing it at the Grove on a Saturday night was a lot of steps.
Right.
So I didn't, I started to sort of take control of my own career that way by starting to produce and, figuring out a way to get things done. And, I always encourage everybody to do that.
You wrote a book too, right?
Yeah. I encourage people to write all the time. Try and direct. Try and produce. I know, Mia, you're producing a movie now.
Yeah.
Right.
Dead Girls.
I think it's awesome. This, everything, the more sort of hyphens you can put in what you're trying to do, I always sort of...
The more marketable you
become. Yeah, I mean, I always sort of consider myself a writer, but maybe I'm just sort of an entertainer who likes words. I don't know.
Yeah. There you go. But obviously you like the directing part as well.
I do.
Are you the producer of the show as well?
Yeah, I'm pretty much. I mean, I have a bunch of other producers too, but I pretty much, because I just sort of know the drill. I've been doing it so long.
Right.
And I think people always question what does a man sort of know about the minds of the women. And I think my curiosity has actually gone a long way, because I'll ask like, one extra question to sort of figure out what's going on in that pretty little head and pull it out of them. Like, my job is just sort of to get the material out of them and collaborate with them and sort of help them craft it into a a narrative arc that sort of makes sense.
Right.
And, yeah, but each time the show is different. We rotate the cast out all the time. We rotate the material out all the time. So if somebody saw the show, you know, 8 years ago in Las Vegas, that doesn't mean you should skip the show here or in New York. You know, in New York, the audience goes to think, mm-hmm. and here I think they come to laugh, and in places like Las Vegas, they go to look.
Yeah.
So, you know, sometimes it's smarter, sometimes it's sexier, sometimes it's funnier. We're recording, on July 9th, we're recording the live sort of comedy album with Uproar Comedy at the Acme Comedy Theater in Hollywood. And that's a little bit of a challenge because you're basically taking pretty women, but it's audio.
Yeah.
So how does the pretty come through that way? And how does the subject matter translate if you're not actually looking at them?
Right.
So that's a little bit of a creative challenge that I like taking on right now, is to sort of how to tap into the oral senses.
Right.
Orally.
But it makes sense, you know, because the thing is that I would imagine one of the things that beautiful women want to do is be heard, you know, and be considered not just for their looks, you know. So
absolutely.
I think something like that would give them a new opportunity.
A veteran theater producer in New York named Michael David, who probably has 30 Tonys on his shelf.
Wow.
Jersey Boys, Into the Woods, all this stuff. Told me that we were the first ones to figure out how to put a dozen women on the stage and let them talk.
Right.
He said there's usually one pretty one and the rest are the chorus.
Right.
And so he goes, that's a good way to do it. You know, around the world, you know, cultures treat attractive women, you know, differently. We like to hang them on a wall as a picture. And
right.
Sometimes in the Middle East, they cover them up, and in the Far East, they paint them. And, you know, there's sort of ways that all these cultures are. So maybe we should let them talk and get it out of their system.
There you go.
Right, Mia?
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So did you, like, study all that? Like, how? I mean, you know quite a bit about...
Well, I knew. I had a... This all sort of started. I had a girlfriend who was good-looking. She's probably too good-looking for me. And we went out one night to a party, and we came home, and she was like, I was really pretty. I was one of the best-looking girls at that party, weren't you? And I said, yeah, you were. And then the next morning, she couldn't get out of bed because she was too ugly. And I thought, what happened here? I need to figure this out if I'm ever going to survive in this world. So I, you know, started asking questions and figuring out the differences between men and women and you know, why women sort of, you know, I think you guys all go through the same things in your lives, just at different times.
Right. Mm-hmm. But it's also a different experience, I think, for a very attractive woman and one that looks average, you know. I mean, it's a totally different experience.
I noticed that in Los Angeles a little bit. Everybody, some women sort of drop out of the game here a little bit. Like, they would be attractive, but they don't want to sort of compete with other attractive women. So they almost, I don't know if they get a little lazy or they go the other way with it. So it doesn't seem like they're trying because they want to.
Right.
Say, oh,
either
I'm
you're the best or...
Yeah. Yeah, or like, oh, I'm not, I don't want to put any makeup on or shower anymore. I don't want to be perceived as that. There's a little bit of that going on in Los Angeles because, you know, looks are such a commodity and it's such a two-dimensional town.
Well, yeah, in that aspect, yeah, I think as far as the industry, but, I mean, there's a lot of deep people here as well.
There are. A lot of the industry. That's true.
Yeah, but at the same time, you're right. I mean, you know, and because all the beautiful people from all over the world move here to make it an entertainment. So we have a big collection of people, and you're right. I mean, everybody competes with each other, you know? And suddenly you feel, oh, I'm not in the running, so I'm just going to let it go, you know?
I like that people come all over here. There's more opportunities than ever here to sort of make your dream happen because there's more outlets for creativity and creative content than ever before.
Right.
That people should constantly be creating and acting and writing, and, you know, you should have a second act to your life if you think you're 50 and you always wanted to paint, you know, go do it. Just do it.
Yeah.
Because you can always throw it up on Amazon and maybe somebody on the other side of the world will want to buy the doodle on a napkin.
There you go.
Really is.
Yeah.
You
never know.
Yeah, but, you know, I mean, that's the thing, and I think it's relevant because I think a lot of men are curious what beautiful women are thinking and stuff, you know, because I think what happens is what we see is not what they see, you know, just like any person, you know, the way you perceive yourself is often not the way that people perceive you. Mm-hmm. So, for example, somebody might look at you and go, wow, you're gorgeous, but inside you're feeling, I'm not looking good enough, you know? And so I think that's one pressure that that many women have. And yeah, you wonder what goes through their mind, you know? Maybe they're not as confident as they look.
I think the best thing that, that men and women can sort of do for each other or to each other is to understand that we fundamentally do not think the same way. If you understand that men do not think like women and women don't think like men, and so because you're not thinking the same way, if you can sort of increase the communication between each other, I mean, it really does help a lot. He doesn't know what you're thinking. He barely knew what the last girl was thinking.
Yeah.
He just figured her out. So you sort of gotta tell him.
Yeah, exactly. You gotta guide us because sometimes, yeah, I mean, I have to agree with you. We think totally differently. We're made up differently, and people don't understand that. I mean, there's definitely room for equality and everything. Nobody's arguing with that, but you can't insist that we're the same because we're not.
Oh yeah, no, we're definitely not.
I mean, men are the hunters, the women are being hunted, and that's just the way it is, you know. So people use different techniques for that.
And she may be in a bad mood for something that has no logical explanation.
Yeah.
And so trying to fight that, and don't get defensive about it.
You may ask what's wrong like a million times, and be like, I'm fine, but really inside we're saying, fuck you, I feel terrible, blah, blah, blah. Like, keep asking me this, then maybe eventually I'll open up and tell you.
You know,
you have to, like, bait it out of me.
One of the things that I do encourage women to do when they come to me or they audition a show or even people I know, like, I think I've told you this, Mia. Do not run from the fact that you're attractive or apologize for it or downplay it or whatever, because it is still the first thing on your resume, always.
Right.
They're going to look at you as that, and so by dismissing that, you're sort of putting yourself at a disadvantage because, you know, you have to understand the way they're looking at you and not just the way you look at yourself.
Yeah.
Exactly, and that's totally different. And I think once a beautiful woman walks outside the door, it's a different experience than an average woman, than a man, you know?
It's different.
I mean, because you get so much attention that I think sometimes it would get in the way. You know, sometimes you feel you're not. It's like almost the attention that a celebrity would get, but you don't have all the fame.
That's right. I mean, you're being noticed and you're being judged constantly as an attractive woman by men, by other women. You know, you have to assume every man does want to sleep with you.
Right.
And go from there.
Exactly.
You have to assume
it's nature.
That's just the way it is.
Yeah. That's just nature, yeah. That's what you got to tell all your daughters out there. It's just the way it is, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Just because they don't, just because they want to, doesn't mean they get to. But you need to understand they
exactly.
want to.
Exactly.
Yeah. So how's your life in LA? You enjoying yourself here?
I do. I like it here. I mean, it's tough. It takes. I would say it takes. How long have you been in Los Angeles?
A long time, 30 some years.
I think it takes 3 years to figure the town out, even geographically. Where everything is.
Yeah.
I was surprised yesterday. We had a photographer for a photo shoot who grew up here, and one of the girls said she was from Apple Valley, and he'd never heard of it. And I'm like, it's probably like 20 miles away.
Oh, wow.
And he's like, yeah, I don't pay attention.
Yeah.
I thought it was strange. But it takes a while. You were here. You remember when we had to use the Thomas Guide to get around?
Yeah, I was telling her about that the other day.
That you had that, and people were looking at it and up in the hills and lost. And the GPS changed a lot for Los Angeles.
It really has, you know. Yeah. And the thing is that it's a spread out city. And so it's also hard on social life, I think, when it's so spread out that neighbors hardly know each other and things like that. But at the same time, you know, it's like so diverse and stuff.
It
know?
Is diverse. It is, you know, that you said spread out. It's a problem. You could meet somebody in Hollywood and... Where do you live? Glendale. Where do you live? Manhattan Beach. Well, that's not going to work out.
Right.
It's a little
too far.
It's a little too far.
That's it.
You know, I felt bad that when I lived in New York City, I lived on 45th and 8th, and I was dating a girl that lived on 52nd and 2nd, which was sort of hard to get there because the subway didn't go that way. You had to go across town, and I probably would have worked out, but then she lived in a fourth-floor walk-up.
Yeah.
So I'm like, even if I get there, the fourth house, and I always think if she lived, like, ground floor, we'd be married.
Right.
Those 26 steps, I just couldn't do it.
Yeah, how do the girls differ from, like, even, you know, like, generally and, you know, with casting for Pieces of S, like, how is it different from New York to L.A.?
New York, there is a little, I mean, obviously, the stereotypical New York girl has a lot more attitude.
Right.
You're also getting, it's harder to make it as an actress in New York, by far. I mean, a lot of people grow up in Cleveland and or Oklahoma or whatever, and they have a choice to go right or go left, and, and they all go to New York because they all want to get on Broadway.
Mm.
And
yeah.
Statistically, is impossible, nearly impossible, to get on Broadway. There's just a handful of jobs, and you are going against the best of the best of the best.
Right.
So people, you know, I always encourage people to come out here and get their feet wet and then maybe go to New York eventually. But, I mean, even when we did a casting, we were an equity show there, and we would do a casting for Pieces of S. There are like 800 girls would, like, camp out just because there were so few jobs.
Wow.
You know, Law and Order would tape there, and The Sopranos, and Sex and the City, and a couple of soaps. Well, those soaps are gone now. Most of the primetime shows are gone now. There's actually more, you know, film and television production in Louisiana than there is maybe in Los Angeles County.
Yeah.
Wow.
Because the tax breaks, there's, you know,
true.
Wilmington, North Carolina is started with Dawson's Creek, and it is just a booming film and television center now.
Oh, really?
You know, so some people, I mean, there's jobs out there, but New York is tough. The difference between, if you go out to a restaurant here, you're always going to get better service because there's a really good chance the person waiting on you thinks that there's a good chance that you're in show business,
right.
So you might be.
In
New York,
for sure.
There's no chance that the person I'm waiting on is in show business, so they're mad that they're working there, and you get terrible service. Like, this guy works on Wall Street. He's not helping me.
Yeah, that's New York for you, man.
So, you know, the women are a little harder, a little more defensive, and they are more apologetic for their looks in New York, which is a shame.
Yeah.
You know, here it is, women want to rock it. They want to go out in as little clothing as possible.
Yeah,
and that's the thing about, you know, Pieces of S. It's very, like, I mean, all the girls are super gorgeous, but it was so, like, inspiring to me. When I saw it for the first time at the Fonda Theater, honestly, I know I did the video for it, but I really didn't know what to expect.
Mm-hmm.
After it was over with, like, I just felt like the light bulb went off in my head, and all the pieces, like, I can relate a little bit to each and every one of them. And I was like, wow, that's how I feel too. You know, it really was an amazing, you know, experience, and all the females are very responsive to each other. I feel like that was, you know, then on the flip side of it, me being on stage, you know, to actually have, you know, a whole handful of, you know, of women actually agreeing with you and, like, cheering you on. It's like, you don't find that anywhere.
No,
else
you don't.
Because
they don't want to believe you're also talented and you're also smart and you're also, if you were pretty but nothing else, they could sort of deal with you.
Yeah, exactly.
They're rooting against you out there in the world. But you should know that too, you know?
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. So what's in the future for you, Brian?
Well, the show is running once a month through the middle of next year at the Roosevelt Hotel, but it is also going on tour. It is going to Texas. It's going to San Francisco. It's going back to New York. It's going to Florida. It's going
Chicago?
To London. It's going to Chicago. It's
Yay!
Going to Detroit. We're booked on about a 26-city domestic tour, and then is going internationally, finally taking it a bunch of places. I didn't think I could deal with it. I couldn't deal with the cast 5 years ago when we had the option to do these things, and my agent kept saying, come on, it's good, you got to go to South Korea with the cast, they want to see American women. And I'm like, I'll lose somebody. I remember we took the show to Vegas a few times, and it was tough to find all the bodies the next morning.
Really?
It was tough. Certain places where the party is just too, because everybody wants to invite the girls out.
Right.
Come to my restaurant, come to my party, whatever, and then you're like going down the list, like, uh-oh, what happened to Diane? And so it's stressful. And then I, you know, we're brought in other mediums. Like, I'm, you know, I like the subject matter. I like the female mind. I think it's complicated, and I think it's interesting, and I think there's a lot of places you can go with it thematically and different mediums. So.
Okay, well, amen to that.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much for joining us, Brian.
Sure.
Go ahead and promote the show real quick so people can.
Go to piecesla.com. The next show is July 12th. We have a comedy taping, as I said, July 9th at Acme, a special one at Acme Comedy Club on La Brea, and then the whole calendar of shows are on piecesla.com.
Sounds good.
All right.
Well, congratulations to you, Brian. You're doing a great job.
Thank you, sir.
And you, you're doing something that a lot of men would like to do, and that is be surrounded by beautiful women.
Yeah, careful what you wish for.
There you go.
Yeah.
All right, everybody, go check out Pieces of Ass, and you'll get to see Mia and all the other beautiful women. So, thank you for joining us today, Mia.
Have
thank
a good
you.
Weekend.
And we'll see you on Monday.
You have been listening to Sam in the Morning with Mia, which airs every Monday through Friday from 10 to 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. If you have a question for the show or if you'd like to inquire about sponsorship opportunities, please send an email along to sam@latalkradio.com. Sam in the Morning with Mia is a production of LA Talk Radio, where we say what we want.